have found that in order to get full coverage on YouTube, you have to have copyright-free music, because I'm all about getting that bag. You cannot get monetized. If you have anything that resembles possible copyright infringement. Therefore, I had to change my name. A new year, a new time for podcasting. And I had to get a funky beat to basically express what I want to put out in the atmosphere. And this is Tenfro. I'm back again. I'm a social critic, thought leader, but I'm more reclusive and cranky. But I want to read, watch, cook, and just share all things that make me happy. My wish is that this increases the curiosity of the listening audience to come back for more and to share with friends. I want 1 million unique listeners and downloads. I want creative quality Millie to be known around the world. Won't he do it? Yes, he will. So if you're listening to me on YouTube, click subscribe. Tip a sister. And I just want to thank you guys for listening. And enjoy and get your bop on. Copyright free.
My homegirl, Naquita J.L. Moore, Najee. Lift every chair and swing till all them white folks scream. Thought y'all could run up on our black king. I'm glad the squad pulled up, dedicated to Nuck. If you buck, may it resound loud as the rolling.
So, in this episode of Woke History, I go take a deeper dive. I was looking up one thing, and you know when you do Google searches, you get like a list of topics. And I was going to look up something because something that tweaked me, I had saw like a announcement for some show on, I don't know, History Channel, whatever, the truth about George Washington, and wanted to take a deeper dive into this first president. I was thinking maybe I was going to find out he was dyslexic or something. And I also found out that George Washington really, he actually wasn't our first president. There was somebody named Hanson that was elected for the first seated Continental Congress. I thought that was wild. And I didn't even know that. I don't know if it wasn't taught in school or it's just something that I stored away probably for a test and quickly forgot. But it was also wild that he had inherited 10 slaves from his father's estate. The Washingtons, you know, had that money. I found out that he and Martha, I think it's Martha Washington, never had children. She actually had 2 children from a previous marriage. And I think I did know because we learned about it during surgery that he died of a peritonsillar abscess. And it probably because they bled him to death instead of, you know, draining it or antibiotics, which they didn't have. He perished from it. Probably from the anemia from the leeches. But why I say all that as far as woke history. Woke history is necessary because race in this country is simply a social construct. It's used to differentiate people based on to make you feel inferior. And you can't change it no more than I can change my sex from a genetic standpoint, because the outer appearance, the phenotype, as it were, can be changed through gender reassignment. But I am genetically, and I identify as a heterosexual female, and I'm African American. When you say black in this country, it's only the color of my skin. But to me, it means more than that. It means what family I identify, where it does not identify unless you were to take the time to talk to me. You wouldn't know that my family originated from the western shores of Africa. We also extend even further beyond the shores of Africa. I have Jewish heritage as well as first origin, first people heritage. So when you say black, which is just a color, or what's my race, that there's so much, there's nothing to that color except to potentially identify where my people came from. But when you do it from a genetic standpoint, it's deeper than that, because, and I am the product of so many different origins of people. And it doesn't negate the fact that I'm human, and that's nothing going to change that either. And what makes me different from you does not make me inferior to you. That is the takeaway from woke history. Just because I'm different doesn't mean I'm inferior, and you need to stop it. However, when I was looking up something about George, I stumbled across a book, Untold American History. This is from Levelman.com. And also, when I look up topics and information for this section, I always, and I'm going to have to write that down, different, not inferior, because I think that's dope. I find out so many great things. For example, and we talk about race being a social construct, what about every time you mention President Obama's name, what is the first thing people say? First black president of the United States. Yeah. I was today years old when I found out he was not. And guess what? Because we have something in this country called the one drop rule. If you are identified as having even one drop of black blood, you are considered African American or black in this country. Well, that applies to five. It's actually been proven that five of our founding fathers and presidents before President Obama. And guess who? I did a whole section about Abraham Lincoln, how he thought of the inferiority of African American men. And dude was freaking black. It's based on a history, their place in history, black people, 2001 book. And I'm going to have to find if this is still in print, because I think I actually know that I need this book in my life. Where historian Leroy Vaughn, MD, MBA, just like me, alleges that Lincoln's father was African-American. His mother had Ethiopian ethnicity, both of which explain his dark skin and coarse hair. I wondered why. I do wonder why his, I've never seen, we hear about the craziness of Mary Todd Lincoln. Maybe she was crazy because she was the only, knowing his ethnicity, she was the only one crazy enough to marry him. Or he would get married. Wow. I just never thought of that. That we've never seen any portraits or people really talking about the family, Abraham Lincoln's family. They basically whitewashed it. Warren Harding. This is the funny. Warren Gamelio Harding, yes, the original Warren G, was rumored to have black ancestry, but DNA studies connected in 2015 disproved those rumors. He just had rampant corruption was defined his administration. Don't need to drag us along with that. Calvin Coolidge, keeping 100. His mother, who last name was Moore, in like M-O-O-R, like the Black Moors, like the African Americans that basically ran the Catholics out of Africa. Those kind of Moors. But she had mixed Indian ancestry. Plus his name was, how cool is to have Calvin? Come on, man. All Calvins I know are black. Dwight Eisenhower. His mama was rumored also to be biracial. And then there's good old Andrew Jackson, who basically, we had the first, didn't he actually run all the Native Americans out of the eastern part of the country and put them into concentration, what equated to concentration camps in the reservations, in their own land? We stole all this land from the first people. His father was also rumored to be black. His oldest brother was reportedly sold into slavery. Whoa. And then Thomas Jefferson, basically the dichotomy of crazy. He rampaged and during his presidency outlawed the international slave trade, but he owned 600 people throughout his lifetime at Monticello. And the whole Sally Hemings and had all those kids by her. But his mother was also of mixed heritage. She was Indian. So he's not necessarily, he's not black, but he had indigenous people in his own family. How crazy is that to me? You know, the more I think about sort of things and Thomas Jefferson epitomizes this, how you can say you can hate a thing and how wrong a thing is. I mean, the horror of slavery. But you own all these slaves, and you are, by every, I don't think she was freed until after he died. How you palled around the world with Sally Hemings, but you actually owned her, and therefore own your own children. And you do all of this in the guise of, you believe in equality of men, and that means you believe in the equality of rich white men. But how do you strike that balance? How do you say you hate and you institution, an entire institution is wrong, but you actually still buy into, and you still buying slaves locally, and you still making slaves because you married to an enslaved woman and you having more kids by her. And I almost am sure that Sally Hemings was not his only concubine. I bet he probably had his way with other and had affairs with other women. She was just his top one. I just think powerful white people and men in particular, that's how they roll back then. And it's really sad how they can basically use one woman up and then just move on and like it's nothing, just because they have an urge and they're strange or new, that they think it's actually okay. And it's actually okay because they actually own you. You talk about the difference in power. So she, and plus Sally and none of those women had anywhere to go. And the only thing that separated them is because they were viewed as property, and they had to do what the master said. And it was because they were women, they were black, or they had one drop of blood in them. and there was nothing else to be done or said or changed. That, to me, the horror of it all and the depravity of it all, but it just the way the things were. And this deep-seated hatred or feelings of inferiority and superiority, you're not going to actually legislate it away. It's about changing mind, changing views, and the work continues. But you have to have the legislation in order to force people to start to reconsider. And there, at least that's a beginning. So in this time of reversing of diversity and inclusivity training and laws and programs, what you lose is the ability to force people to basically do the right thing, to get them to think in a different way, where their microaggression or their actions are just downright wrong, and there needs to be a penalty for it. But you can't wipe it away and can't sweep it under the rug. They still have to do the work and what those programs are meant for. And the toxicity that is spawned that DeSantis was talking about in Florida, because he's made it state law to remove those programs from state institutions. So all these people get fired. But what it does, it just allows you to operate, to people to operate in a vacuum where they get tired, where you're not calling them out on their BS. So you can do those things, but it's also going to slap back on you, because what it does breed is stupidity. And it makes it okay for people to sit in their stupidity and racism and then say, I don't think about that. And it makes them, it's okay for to have this complete imbalance and not think, why can't we all be on? Why you can actually have, you didn't know, you can actually have a racist idea and not, or homophobic idea and not really know it, and it comes out, but there should be repercussions for it. So now that people don't have the protection, where you don't think people will just out and out just do blatant or say blatant things, they actually are going to start. I think people have started doing it, because I think Trump made it actually okay to be a rip-roaring racist KKK waving flag. But we are a different people. So now you say something stupid. We got folding chairs now. Deadly weapons in our folding chair. People are going to boss up on you. This turning the other cheek BS, until those things are basically, when you realize it's going to take having somebody slap the taste out of several people's mouth before you may be think, you know what? We probably do need these programs before allies say something really stupid and get the shit beat out of them. You know, maybe that's what it's going to take. However, any means necessary. And we're a whole different type of people. We will bust you in the head and ask for forgiveness later. So think about that. Anytime you have somebody that wants to take away these programs, that want people to basically think twice before they say something real greasy, you better get ready for the true backlash. You could have taken care of this calmly, but now I'm just going to go upside your head. Just saying.
Butterfly in the sky, I can go twice as high. So take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow. And ways to grow, a temporal rainbow. I can be anything. So take a look, it's in a book, a temporal rainbow. A temporal rainbow. A temporal rainbow.
This has been a great week or couple of weeks of some amazing book reading. I have watched and stunned and learned so much from the legal proceedings that surrounding the murder trial of a whiny Bill. So call him whiny because he's such a punk ass. But anyways, but I, in between recesses and while I'm waiting to go and get something to eat, I've been able to read, and it kept my mind on something else. And it's so funny because it's Mind of My Mind by Octavia Butler. I have become a devotee of hers way after she passed away. I think she ended up dying, I said, 2008, 2009, after complications after a fall. And she became more famous after her death and more awarded after her death, before she even, she had only a modicum of success during her lifetime. And she's was on the grind for years. A lot of her books were cutting edge, sci-fi fantasy. She was writing about genetic editing not too long, or was it during the time that it was actually being discovered, CRISPR, etc. And this book, and it's so funny because I'm talking about this after the woke history section. She actually, a lot of her books, because she's African-American woman in the United States, and she, throughout her entire career, I'm sure was subject to racism and agents that didn't know what to do with her. She created a race of, talked about this race so much. And these race of people in Mind of My Mind was like a super race created by Doro, who had telekinetic and psychokinetic abilities. And he was basically creating a race to feed him and to exalt him. But he thought he could create them and he could discard them at will, or leave some of them incapable of defending their minds against all of the psychological detritus of people surrounding them. And there was a hierarchy. There were latents, there were what they call mutes. These mutes were people like me that don't have any telekinetic ability. And he wanted to create a super offspring that was Mary, and who ended up being, it was his child, but he would end up being so strong, or even stronger than he was, came to her ability and what her purpose was faster than he ever did in his 4,000 years of living. He basically created and made it just for food, because that's all he thought he was. But it was so wild that he, even though he had this long life and it consumed all of these different people and created, he never really I don't think he ever fully realized his ability, but his progeny did. And then when he discovered too late that he wasn't going to be able to kill him, not only was she able to kill him and figure out what her purpose was, she basically created the other like her, and together they were able to destroy Doro before he realized it was way too late. Because he left her alone, and what she started doing, his discards became her strength. So that was really, I thought that was actually pretty dope. And he was a molester. He didn't care. Because he slept with her, he slept with his grandmom, the grandchildren. It didn't matter as long as he was being fed. And also, the discussion of how she used the concept of slavery and control was just also different forms or different versions of slavery. And we have to look at that. Manipulation and a lot of these things could be even more brutal than human bondage, because you basically had control of the people, different people's mind. And the difference between the telepaths and the latents were like what we call in our world, what we call like allies, until they actually say something or do something stupid. And that's with the latents. Latents had never fully realized telepathic or telepathic capabilities. They received and could not really block out all of the psychological issues surrounding psychological warfare that was going on. The chaos of a child's mind, they couldn't deal with that. But if you actually take the time to find out what people's abilities are, what this new or Mary's community proof is, everybody has different abilities and capabilities. And when you take the time to find out what they can truly excel in, it does the person good, as well as the community as a whole good. The way they took over the best part of town is basically by working as a community and in concert. And that is how it's also how a society can progress. When everybody is doing it, you take the time to find out by just blocking out all the noise, psychological or elsewise, and you work within your either what your capabilities or abilities are and round other people with similar capabilities and ability, that can only allow, it'll draw people to you, and then your community will prosper. That is utopia to me. This community that she writes about, where everybody's doing their job and you're doing it well and you're bringing something good to the table, it only helps society as a whole. And this is applicable even now. This futuristic or fictionalized utopia can be applied very simply. What are your abilities or capabilities? What can I do to make society better? And just start at the community level. But it would require that you have to talk to each other and be around each other. And it's kind of hard to do that in the age of COVID. And it's this time you can have people, and having people in not only the position because they look good on paper, but they actually are doing a good job and best suited for them and to them, that progresses all of society. You protect your kids, raised by people best trained and suited to do it. And when a collective society works to enhance that society, it grows fast, it's self-sufficient, and there is a real connection between the members because they are allowed to excel in their purpose. They're not courting off based on some stupid concept or hierarchical race, or because they're gender specific or they're non-conforming. Those things will rip a society apart. Those differences are just so minuscule. And why do we pay attention to them? We can't let religion or personal beliefs, those things that will actually put someone else in danger or yourself in danger, that's not tolerated by a really collective society. But if you can do something that will positively enhance not only yourself, but everybody as a collective, and you are in a position to continue to do that, and you can reproduce it and make it applicable to other people, why not? if it's in a positive matter, positivity, and everybody will progress. But these other tricky things that people want to do and say, passing stupid laws, you don't let people make, you know, make their own decision based on what their needs are in the immediate family members. And you only make them to enhance your own power. If you're that power hungry, and if, like, for example, if you want to be a Doro, just so you know, the people that you are so willing to basically discard or ignore are those very ones that can come back and actually get rid of you or destroy you. So your power collection is all for naught. You got to basically try to make decisions that are going to work for everybody and ensure the success of everybody in that community. But when you pass these two one-sided laws, it doesn't really make a whole bunch of sense. And the things that you do to reverse things that truly level the playing field so we all can progress, when you reverse those things too, it just takes so much time to undo the stupidity. It took you 200 years just to get to the point. Things like affirmative action, Roe v. Wade, when you reverse just simple things in a society to level the playing field, and then it's going to take another half a century to a century to basically reverse it, to go forward again. You are just sending us back into a darker time where it's going to take another one or two generations to basically reverse the harm that you guys have actually done, just because you are power hungry, you're power drunk, and it's not going to do society. And it does nothing to improve or better society. You got to think of those things. And that's why a lot of the book and what I read and share with the listening audience, because if it's not going to do anything to positively impact or to improve, or that it that you don't get encouraged to create something positive from something that I read, or if I don't get that encouragement, I'm not going to share it, because number one, I probably wouldn't be able to finish reading that book because it was just so off-putting. But I hope that when somebody listens to this podcast, that it would encourage them to maybe take a better look at themselves. What can they do to improve or create something that's going to actually be impactful to everybody and on to society? I don't want to create another mini me, because I can't. Don't have the equipment anymore. But at least I can do something to entertain and to inspire positivity with other people. And that's one of the things that I believe Leslie Jones has done throughout her career. She really sees comedy as a craft. She works at her craft. She studies comedy. And she makes no whole bar. She say basically she's not conceited. She's just convinced that she is funny as hell. And she really is. She shared in her book, her autobiography. And you got to actually, this is like a book that I would love to probably have a hard copy of. But she actually narrates the audible version of it. And I think it's absolutely funny. She goes over her time with SNL. She took away so many tools from SNL that has been applicable to other things throughout the rest of her career. She's entering in this chapter where she learned so much from other comedians, Kristen Wiig, etc. And she actually writes her own stuff. That was one of the things that Cat Williams said on the Shay Shay, Club Shay Shay, that he writes his own joke and he tries it out. He goes on the road and does that. She actually is a writer. She was actually on the road with him. And she wrote her own stuff. And she was grinding 20 years before she even got on SNL.
and then went to the next level because she was able to apply the tools that she learned from other comedians and honing her craft and go to even higher levels. She cares for everyone that's in her inner circle, but sometimes the agents and the managers just are really sus. You know, they're not always for her. She actually had to terminate one of the managers after her experience with Uber Eats, I believe, because it wasn't just doing her job. They get paid a fee when the client works, Leslie. But she knows what she will and will not do and what would be a good fit for her. And she's not going to do just everything. That can be hard or it can be difficult. But you would think after somebody's been with you for over a decade, like in this manager was, that he wouldn't let people talk to her a certain way, that he would stand up for her and fight for her. But if he just looks at you as a pay, but you got to get over the fact that they go look at you as a paycheck, because if you got to stay on this thing to get paid so they can get paid, and that kind of, it can basically, you can actually end up having an adversarial relationship with them because that you don't, they don't garner or will not garner the same respect for you, because if you are, especially if you like Leslie, if you're willing to walk away from something, if you are truly being mistreated, but you're not, the manager is not going to protect you. How can you, because they want to protect their bag versus trying to really protect and make it right for that client. They, a lot of managers that she has worked with has not figured that out yet. You want to protect them, you would think you would want to protect your client, because if they're doing well, then that means the project is going to go well, and so they're going to keep rolling and doing other great things. But if you allow them to get beat up, truly physically and mishandled physically and mentally, how are they going to be good to work and do everything, something else, another greater project? That doesn't really happen, and it can't happen. You got to protect the merchandise, the client, and sometimes at the expense of that job. But it also goes that you can't allow, and it's just so how Hollywood can be really dog eat dog, you know. There are a lot of people that are just in it for the bag at the expense of the artist. And that is kind of counterintuitive, because you would think that you would protect them. You would not mistreat them, obvious, especially from an obvious standpoint. And you would make sure that things are on point. But there are not a lot of good people that are really good at doing that, protecting the artists, and still, and the projects can even be greater if they would just do the bare minimum. You know what I mean? How great, again, how greater the whole project and society would be, and how much great stuff that we could get when that basic, the basic courtesies and niceties, respect between the crew as well as the artists, the people that make the art, and if boundaries are respected and the work gets done and it gets done with excellence, how greater and how many more great things that we would be allowed to see. But we get bogged down in this negativity, and it just doesn't, you don't create good stuff. So with those things, with that said, that's how I'm going to end this section. You got to look at the balance between just respecting boundaries and getting a good product, entertaining product. How good would, how much more we would be obtained, and we would get to see so many great and versatile things, and it won't be so formulaic, and it won't be so boring. And I bring this up because I did see the new Ghostbusters Frozen, whatever, Frozen Kingdom. And I watched the Ghostbusters that Leslie Jones was in. And she said the movie that was released was just so far from the fun, entertaining film that they actually shot. So my niece and I went to see the new Ghostbusters, and I can truly say it was very boring. It wasn't scary at all. I thought the effects were okay, but there was Hannah said something I thought was profound. It was lack an action. It's a Ghostbusters. They focus in on the little depressed white girl who was obviously a brilliant Ghostbuster and probably a scientist, but there was some it just lacked action. I wish I could have saw her and the spirit girl. It's formulaic. It was an old spirit coming back trying to get even and get a ghost army, release a ghost army and take over the world. And it was the Ghostbusters, some of the original crew had to come back and beat them down. Very formulaic. How they redid that same formula was still not as exciting as the original Ghostbusters. And I need to go back and watch that because I don't know if I was even impressed with any of the original Ghostbusters. No, I was not impressed with Leslie Jones. I don't even think the one-liners were even as funny. You know, who you gonna call? And then Ghostbusters and the people that were family members of the original team, the original scientists, the old captain could have come back. It just could have been more Ghostbusting is the bottom line. And it was, and I wonder, was it more exciting? What they shot, was it more exciting than the final product? Because the final product was not exciting at all. Good graphics. The photography was good. I think the sound was jacked up. I don't know if there was just something wrong with Regal. I don't think they cut the stereo on until halfway during the show. So the sound equipment in the movie theater, they need to upgrade it or have whoever is supposed to be watching the films basically do their damn job. Or there's a glitch. And if it's like supposed to be automatic, there could be a glitch in the switch. But I just, again, I wish there seems to be politics with the major decision makers and the directors and producers of the show. And I wonder if the merging of those, besides somebody, I don't know whose vision this, the final product was, but this final product was bland. We know what the plot is. Y'all are going to beat back the ghost. Okay. How do you get there could have been more exciting. And because this final product was not exciting at all.
The Shade Bunch. I hope turning up for checks to pay for fake lifestyles were to be a part of the Shady Bunch.
You guys know I am a reality TV show junkie. I just got into watching FBI Most Wanted with my sister, and she made a comment. Is this still better than that reality TV that you watch? And it is. But there's nothing like the gossipy, stupid nature of reality TV, even though there's nothing real about it. However, it also dictates who I actually listen to on my podcast, because I'm a podcast junkie as well as a podcaster. And it just so happened this week, Binge Worthy, which is right up there with DJ Richie Sky and, of course, the king of reality TV, Carlos King. His reactions are what I used to, and his like cartoon clips are just so freaking hysterical that I used to use his emojis or my own emoji. He gave me the idea to use my own emoji to actually create clips. I haven't done that for a while, but I'm thinking about going back to it just to announce that I've dropped another episode of my show. If I could figure out how to use it and change the background, I would be even more stellar. But anyways, there is an extended trailer that basically dropped for Real Housewives of Potomac. Now, the whole season was trash. I thought it was mean girl, mean spirited, and just very depressing. But the lurks that they are basically popping. I think it is the best, probably the best one. And I was shocked. I was like, who is that white lady up there? But it was Kern Huger. Her wig is popping. Her dress, her body is snatched. I think she's had either really good, some good series of Botox, or she actually had a full facelift and they had her eyes done. But her stylist and whoever her surgeon is are both on point. And then he said something about Juan's roommate, Robin Dixon. Her and Giselle were basically doing their best to not work with and ice out Candace. Almost the same way they did before Monique Samuels ran screaming from that show. I've watched the other housewives, except for one of the housewives attacking, sexually assaulting on the girls' trip, where you can't come back from that. And basically NeNe Leakes talking herself off the show. They could have worked out. And they could, if they had not allowed Giselle and Robin and the rest of the girls to isolate her, they could have worked through that. I think it would have taken behind the camera, because what they allowed them to do this season, it made the show so boring and disjointed because there was no interaction. And they alluded to it on What's Happening Live that if they can't find a way forward, I think he's basically put both Giselle, who said, oh, they'll never fire me because I'm a quiet producer, and her friend Robin. If you can't find a way forward, you are not going to be on this show. Either they're going to sit you down or you're not going to be renewed. So it looks like they are going, if they don't work some shit out on the upcoming reunion, there is a very good chance that they're either going to be paused or replaced. And that they don't give up. And they also, that means we don't care even if you are a fan favorite, you are going to have to work this shit out, because when you don't, the show has suffered, and it suffered in ratings, and they don't want that, because if nobody's watching your shit, you're not going to get the advertising budget for that show. So, and you're not going to mess with the network's bag. That is what I think that is alluding to. If nobody's watching you, no, the advertisers pull out, and then it's basically affecting my check. That's what basically Andy and his shady behind Cohen is saying. And they got a lot of good material. Giselle's father passed away, and I think I heard that in passing, how she is going to deal with that, her daughter going away to college, the aftermath of that. And then also Karen just got picked up another DUI. And I say another because y'all remember earlier in the show's episode, they said that Karen was actually being driven around everywhere because she had lost her license. She had a suspended license for a very long time. And now it's come back full circle where she's actually, she wrecked her Maserati and she's picked up another DUI. They are going to have a field day with that. But they're only going to be able to the grand dame of it all, because the grand dame ain't a grand dame if she can't drive nowhere because she rolling dirty. That's a whole season how they're going to deal with that right there. But who would know that if nobody ain't bothering because they're trying to do this ice out shit? You know what I mean? You can't have an ensemble cast and the ensemble ain't ensembling. I also agree with, because what's her name? The other Nigerian girl. I don't even know if either one of them, Happy Eddie and his wife, the doctor. I don't know if this show is even good for her, because it doesn't appear that she's gelling all that well. Now, Candace is made for reality TV. You know what I'm saying? But I don't think Dr. Wendy Osefo, that's her name, is what you would call, and what's going on, or nothing is going on with her, except for serving up looks. But I don't think she can fully clock in. And she is basically giving something that we would want to see. And that other, her other counterpart is just a mean girl. And if she was in there to basically shade and basically drum up a storyline, if you have to basically create a storyline, I don't think you're needed. Same thing. Ashley Darby. If you're not going to give us real storyline instead of just staring up mess, we don't really need you to be up there either. Robin, because you're Ron's roommate and you're only willing to talk about what's going on behind a paywall, even though you're getting a check from us, you don't need to come back either. But Mia, Candace definitely are perfect for this show. I want to see what happens with Karen, because if they make her clock in and we go to court with her, I'm all for that. And Giselle, you would have and allow us a storyline, but we're not going to allow you to destroy the chemistry of the cast because you are refusing to interact with other castmates. If you're not going to be able to work, if you're not going to clock in and you don't want to work with anybody, that does not make an ensemble cast reality TV show make. So either show up or show yourself out. Carlos King coming through. Yes, honey. You actually have to watch his live in total on his YouTube channel. He basically, right after Real Housewife of Potomac wrapped last night, he recorded a live during the first few minutes, or actually probably in the totality, because it was that video was 48 minutes long. So he basically was shocked, like I was, about how good the last 20 minutes of the entire episode was. And that's what we've been asking and begging for since they kicked Monique Samuels off this show. Mia and Gordon gave it to us. We didn't have some manufactured storyline. His whole life was revealing for a lot of reasons. They talked about the reality of when these young women marry these old men. And they basically shared the real tea with us last night. No more manufactured storylines, fake beefs that need to be over. Ashley just being messy for no damn reason. That fight was even stupid. I'm not even going to talk about any of those things. I don't care that her and Michael Darby are never getting married or never getting divorced. I'm tired of Juan Dixon's roommate not sharing her real life, but she'll put it behind the paywall. I don't care about, we saw some realness from Giselle, because her father actually was diagnosed with brain cancer, and we found out not too long after his surgery he passed away. We couldn't go through that journey, wasn't taped or shown or for us to be able to relate to some of that. I think that photo shoot that Mia had set up was awesome. No, Robin Dixon did not look like Mariah Carey, but it was actually good photos of her. She's a beautiful woman, but we don't know her at all about what it's like. If you don't want to be a reality TV star, but she just likes to check, I guess, because she literally is getting paid to be filmed in a few scenes and not interacting with Candace. And it's that beef is so stupid. And what Candace said, even though it was real blunt, I think it was true. She was basically deflecting because she knew Juan was not going to tolerate it or wouldn't tolerate it or wouldn't be filmed. But she also knew she had to keep her check and some type of relevance. So we get all these made up deflecting storyline. And then Sesame Street shows up and just to be messy. I don't know. And we knew that Giselle was not going to tolerate it because it was messing up her brand. But she was going to try to deflect that back on Canyons when it wasn't her fault. Because Ashley should not have invited that Sesame Street looking girl. And she would have had to been the instruction, why are you beefing with Candians? We already got the video. We've dissected it. Chris didn't do anything, nor did Eddie. So what is your problem? And then NECA is there, and she just looks like, huh, all the time. What is her purpose? What we got in the last 20 minutes solidified Real Housewives' place in franchise history. It's on the level, and I agree with Carlos King, it's on the level of how Portia and Kenya saved Real Housewives of Atlanta from oblivion. And if they keep the realness up and not this manufactured BS, we are going to be in for some good TV. They're going to come into their, ninth season, and they're going to be stellar. They're going to deserve every single trip, and it's going to be fun. And it's not going to really matter wherever they go, because it's going to be some gangster stuff. And we're going to have paternity tests. We're going to see Mia entering into either she's going to continue to openly be with Inc. Because if you have an open marriage, what does it care now that everybody know about it now? Why do you have to get divorced? Or how's the co-parenting look in this age? You know, that is what I'm mostly interested in. I'm just tired of manufacture. I thought it was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. A real conversation, you know, a little bit produced. But I think I hope they have Gordon under contract, because it looks like he is still fighting his family. He needs some coin, and Mia is getting ready to cut his ass off. So that is going to be interesting. And I don't know about y'all. I was actually shocked about how good. And it wasn't really good until that last scene. But I knew it was building up to something because I had seen the trailer for it. That's why I think I was actually watching it. That stupid fight, I had saw the clips of it on TMZ like last year, so I really didn't care. But the last part, they basically how he was re-talking about and saying all these great things about her after the photo shoot when they revealed those photos. I think, who did I think the best one? Actually, Jizzy was actually the girl, one of the ladies called her Gizzard. Gizzard actually looked really good as Beyonce. That was actually believable. I would not say that Gisele Bryant is not a beautiful woman, because she is. She's very on Beyonce's level. I don't think, but in the inside, I think she's a little dark. Karen was actually okay. Candace was okay. Even Ashley, she looked really pretty as Dorothy Dandridge. I give them all of that. But what I don't understand, and just if Ashley is there just to be messy, and she may be a joy to probably for production work, which she may be one of the favorites, but I just can't stand these manufactured storylines. And I'm hopeful that they would be truthful. And I would just hope that they would actually absolutely be truthful in their, just be truthful. What is actually going on? Yes, Juan is still cheating on you. That was one of the reasons that led to the demise of your first marriage. And now you remarried this dude and he's doing the same crap. And you know about it. But y'all don't want to talk about it, even though you're on a reality TV show. Nobody wants to see that. And we don't care anymore. Mia is basically paying off and being the refreshing force multiplier, as it were. And that's what we want to see. We need to see more of that. If not, all of us are going to probably stop watching on episode 3 if y'all don't give us what the audience and the people that actually watch these shows, what we actually have come to expect. And that last 20 minutes was probably one of the realest moments since Monique Samuels punched Canyon's Dillard in the forehead. And that's it for this episode of Ten Froers Reading. You know, I talked cash-ish all last year. I hope the listening audience will continue to enjoy my opinion and not so subtle shade. I mean, I'm 2,000 listeners per episode in, so go run tell that, haters. I may take it on the road if I get hint sponsorship. Navigate to dalesangelsinc.blog for swag and extended podcast notes. Don't forget to hit like or leave a 5-star review. It gets me on top of the algorithms and it may just get you on my show. 2023's motto is boss up and get the bag. And as always, tell a friend and thank you for listening.